buckets. I get buckets. I get buckets.
I get buckets.
I get buckets. I get buckets. I get buckets.
I get buckets.
I get buckets.
I get buckets.
I get buckets.
All right, welcome everybody to a new episode of the By George podcast. My name is Pete. You can find me on Twitter at PetyBuckets. We are going to be covering the Atlantic 10 out-of-conference schedule today. It's a really interesting day to be recording. We found out earlier today that Kartiari Gordon from St. Louis is transferring. Huge implications across the A-10. St. Louis looks like a legit contender for the A-10 title with him. He's a top 50-ish recruit, I think, this year. Only a freshman, but clearly extremely talented, averaging 9 points, 4 rebounds, getting about 25 minutes per game, pretty efficient as well. Really, really good player, and St. Louis will not have him anymore. So that's a huge development today. Other big development is that Brian was supposed to come and record this pod with me, but his wife is sick and his baby is sick, and real life got in the way. So I am flying this plane solo right now, which is kind of terrifying. Hopefully I'm informative and interesting enough to keep this going. But let's go ahead and dive into the A-10s at a conference. So the way we're going to do this is that I've got three general tiers for the A-10. Tier 1 is VCU, St. Louis, Dayton, and Davidson. And yeah, I am keeping St. Louis in there. Tier 2 is St. Joe's, Rhode Island, UMass, Duquesne, and Mason. You can probably make an argument that St. Joe's is probably between Tier 1 and Tier 2. They might be by themselves in Tier 2, and the other teams are Tier 3. There's not enough separation. I think we can just sort of lump them all in there together like that. And then the bottom tier, where I don't want to spend a ton of time, is Bonaventure, LaSalle, Fordham, GW, and Richmond. So we'll go really quickly through those. First, Richmond. Chris Mooney might get fired this year. I think he's a pretty good coach in the sense of he can maximize what he's getting from the people he can put on the court. So I think he's a sharp X's and O's kind of guy. He's had a lot of trouble keeping that program stable. I think they lost Quan Four, they lost DeMonte Buckingham in the offseason, and those are just killer because that would have been a very good team if he was able to maintain those two players. But as it is right now, they just don't have a ton of horses. GW and LaSalle, two bottom of the barrel teams that are really, really bad. Ashley Howard at LaSalle, it's his first year. He has plenty of time. I really like Maurice Joseph for George Washington. However, I fear his time there is probably coming to an end as well. He was not hired by the current AD. He was made full-time by the previous AD. And I think he's only got two years or three years left on his deal. But it looks like his deal becomes in range of a buyout, I think, after this season. So that's something to watch as well. Fordham has a sneaky good record, but when you look at it, it's just it's all empty calories. They have played absolutely nobody, and they've lost games at home to teams like Maine. They've also they played almost every single game, I think, at home. I think they've only played a couple games away or at neutral sites. I don't think they're very good, despite the record. One thing that'll be interesting is they go to VCU this weekend, VCU goes to them this weekend to start off conference play. So we will know pretty quickly whether or not we should take Fordham seriously. If they give VCU a game, maybe we'll pay them some attention. I have a feeling they're going to get destroyed. And then Bonaventure. Bonaventure is just another team that doesn't have the players to compete in the A-10 this year, even in a down year this year. I really like Courtney Stockard, fantastic player, probably one of the best players in the A-10. There is not much around him at all. They've got a couple of really nice-looking freshmen, but not guys who are ready to be impact players yet at this level. So that's the bottom tier. Apologies to those five teams, but we're going to move on and do a much deeper dive into the top nine teams that I think are going to be a lot more relevant in the conference race. So let's start with Mason. Full disclosure, I am a George Mason fan. If this is your first time listening to this podcast, I am a season ticket holder, alumni class of 2009, been a season ticket holder ever since then. So I love Mason. I was super excited for the basketball season this year, and now I want to curl up in a ball and cry when I think about how we did out of conference. I think our best win was at William & Mary, which is just sad. We dropped a home game to American, dropped another game to Penn. There was really nothing good about the out of conference, with the exception of the Kansas State game recently. And even that has, its ups and its downs. The good part about Kansas State is we stormed back, lost by 1 point at Kansas State. They're very good this year. We had two shots to win it. The bad about Kansas State is we were down at 20. We took a 20-point deficit into halftime. We were down by 21 at one point in the second half. So frustrating that it felt like it was probably winnable if a few things went differently. But Mason is who they are this year. And I think if you want to take a sort of 35,000-foot view, the problems with Mason is that, first of all, defensively, they're pretty terrible in the out-of-conference. Defense was a layup line. I wrote some blogs about this on the site, but Mason was giving up so many shots at the rim. They were letting teams get to the rim, and they were giving up a really high percentage at the rim. All those numbers have gotten better recently, so I think that there is some evidence that there are adjustments being made, and the defense is getting better. However, we're still not a good shooting team. We don't really have many bucket getters outside of Otis Livingston and Justin Kyer. Mason shoots under 33% from deep, which is not good. So overall, it's a team that's kind of has to win ugly, and they're not really built to do that. Digging in a little deeper, if you want to get more micro, Gonar Mar. He's had the most bizarre sophomore slump I think I've ever seen. He was an incredibly promising freshman last year. We were all hyped about him. 11 points per game, 4.5 rebounds, almost a steal per game last year. Not super efficient, but very good for a freshman. I certainly thought he was going to make a leap and be like a superstar this year. It's baffling. This year he's at 3 points per game, 2.7 rebounds, hardly any steals. And he's still getting minutes is the crazy thing. So it's not like he's just been benched. It's like he's still getting a ton of minutes, but he's not really able to make a box score impact on the game at all. And it's just strange. Then we've got the issue of Jared Reuter not really living up to the billing. And by not living up to the billing, I mean he's a decent player. He has a role on this team. He's going to continue to be a starter. He'll be, he's useful. However, Dave Paulson, Mason's coach, came on this podcast and told us that he thought Jared could be a top five guy in the A-10. And I think, nobody really understands what Dave was looking at or what Dave was thinking when he said that, because that just doesn't really seem like the type of player that Reuter can be. Reuter's 6'7", so he's a little bit undersized for the power forward center kind of role that he wants to play. Foot speed isn't great. I think he's part of the reason for some of the issues that we had defending the paint. He's not a rim protector at all. Doesn't seem to have much of a vertical. And his offensive game, he's decently polished around the basket. Certainly not, exceptional. So it's tough to see what part of his game Dave thought, was going to propel him to the top of the A-10. So that's just a way of, explaining why people thought Mason was going to be really good this year, and how we've fallen so far short of expectations. I think those are two pretty good ones. And again, we don't have many bucket getters outside of Otis Livingston. One thing that becomes really apparent when you watch this team a lot is that Mason can't make teams pay for doubling Otis. Teams will do this all the time. They'll double him on the perimeter. They'll double him on pick and rolls. And Mason doesn't really have anybody who finishes pick and rolls really well. We don't have a lot of shooters. So teams double Otis all the time. They force the ball out of his hands. And, Mason isn't able to take advantage of that. And it's led to Otis having a lot of, really crappy games this year by his standards. And I think you're going to see teams do it a lot in conference play, and Mason needs to figure out a solution. So overall, they're going to have to win ugly unless some offense magically appears from somewhere, but they don't really have the personnel to be a great defense or rebounding team. So I think they're probably towards the bottom of the second tier here. 7, 8, 9 might be a realistic place to expect them to finish in conference. So next, let's get to UMass. UMass is interesting. They've got one good win against Providence. Their only other KenPom top 200 win is against Southern Illinois. They've played a middling schedule haven't gotten a ton of results. They got a pretty bad loss to Howard in there. I think they also lost to Harvard. They're a team that runs really hot and cold. Overall, they're pretty bad defensively. I was talking about the problems that Mason has had being a layup line kind of defense. UMass is even worse. Opponents get to the rim and score there really easily. UMass is bottom 75 in the country in both shots at the rim and field goal percentage at the rim. Means it's very easy to get to the rim against them, and you're not going to be met with resistance when you get there. And in addition to that, teams are also shooting 35% from deep against Massachusetts as well. So they're not defending the rim, and they're not defending the perimeter very well, which is not a formula for success in today's basketball landscape. I think the rim defense might be a Rashawn Holloway issue. If you watched him throughout his career, he seems much heavier now than he's ever been. And there's, you know, I want to tiptoe around the subject a little bit, but there's not really any other way to say it. He doesn't look like he's in playing shape. I think that's part of the reason that they've had trouble protecting the paint. UMass is 253rd in block percentage on KenPom. They're 298th in steal percentage. They're a middling rebounding team in the 150 to 170 range, I think. They just don't do anything particularly well. It's tough to see what their calling card is going to become on defense. In terms of personnel, Lawan Pipkins is excellent once again. He's averaging close to 20 points per game. He's not very efficient at this point. I would expect this to probably turn around, but he's shooting 40% overall, 32% from three. He's chipping in 5 rebounds, 6 assists, a steal and a half per game. Wonderfully well-rounded player, should easily be first team A-10 this year. Probably a contender for player of the year, depending on how UMass finishes in conference. Carl Pierre has shown a little bit of regression. Last year, he shot an insane 47% from three on high volume. He's only at 39% this year. 39% still very good, but I think a lot of people just kind of assumed that he was going to be better at three-point shooting than he was last year. That's not really a safe assumption for freshmen who post tremendous outliers like that. Guys don't always just improve linearly like that. And furthermore, he's still kind of one-dimensional. He doesn't really contribute much in terms of rebounds, steals, assists. So, you know, his calling card is he's a shooter and is shooting not quite as good as it was last year, which helps explain some of their struggles. They've added a lot of new faces. One of them really worth mentioning, Jonathan Laurent. When you dig into the numbers, is really been sneakily pretty good. He's averaging 12 points per game on less than 7 shots, shooting over 50% from 3. 5.5 rebounds, 2 assists, a really well-rounded player. He has a 131.2 O rating on KenPom. That is by far the best among the UMass players. Some positives for UMass: they're good offensively. They're a good three-point shooting team, 36.4%, top 100 in the country. They get to the rim a ton, 41% of shots taken at the rim. The offense is working. If they can patch up the defense, which I don't know exactly what the answer is there, they have an offense that can score with anybody. Their effective field goal percentage is just a shade under Dayton's in the half court. And Dayton's one of the best offenses in the country right now. So I think UMass kind of has the same problem as Duquesne, who we're going to get to just on a smaller scale. They just have so many new faces, new roles to acclimate to. It's tough to see how they reach their ceiling between now and March. One thing about their defense is that they just added Jerry Baptiste. He's a grad transfer from somewhere. I'm forgetting where. He's a big dude. He's kind of a monster. So they might be better suited to have him anchoring the paint. He might get some of those Holloway minutes. I haven't seen them enough to know exactly how they're going to use him. But the thing is that if you're replacing Holloway for defensive upgrades, Holloway is a really, really well-polished offensive player who finishes really well on the other end. So there's going to be a give and a take, and it'll be interesting to see what McCall does with it and how he can shape up UMass going forward. Now let's get to Duquesne. Duquesne is a really fun team to watch. I've caught more of Duquesne than I expected to this year so far, and they're fun. They've got a lot of size. They've got some really good guard play, a couple fun new guards. Sincere Carey is a good facilitating point guard. Tavian Dunn-Martin splits duties with him there. Sometimes they play them both together, and Tavian Dunn-Martin will move to the two. Sincere Carey seems to be the main guy when he's on the floor usually. They're both freshmen. They're both really, really solid. One thing about Duquesne is that they're 8-2 at home so far. They've only played one true road game where they lost at Notre Dame. Their other games away from home have been a neutral site loss to Pittsburgh, a neutral site win over Radford. Every other game that they've played has been at home. They're going to be tested immediately. They go to Davidson on Saturday to open conference play. Ken Pom has them as a 10-point dog. It'll be interesting to see how they respond to playing on a road environment for the first time since before Thanksgiving. But yeah, they have a lot of newcomers. Mike Lewis just announced he's transferring a few days ago. He was starting to get pinched for minutes because Mike Lewis is another guy who's more of a three-point shooter than anything, and his three-point shooting numbers weren't great this year either, around 32%. So his minutes started falling, probably saw the writing on the wall that he might not be in Keith D'Ambro's long-term plans there. So they have a lot of newcomers. Eric Williams Jr. and Kellen Taylor are the only guys who returned from last year's team. I think they have 10 other guys on scholarship right now. And all 10 of them are either transfers or freshmen. They play pretty traditionally at the 1 through 5 spots. Again, Sincere Carey and Tavian Dunmartin rotate at the 1. Frankie Hughes plays a lot at the 2. Eric Williams, more of a 3/4. They've got Marcus Weathers at the 4. Michael Hughes, Austin Rotroff at the 5. It seems like how they usually play based on what I've seen. Sincere Carey, let's get back to him real quick. I think he's one of those guys who's making a really strong case for all freshman honors this year. Really good drive and dish point guard. He's got good size, good court vision. I don't have his assist numbers in front of me right now, but they're really, really good. Actually, I'm just pulling up Ken Pom. He has an assist rate of 39%, so almost 40% of the buckets that happen while he's on the floor, he assists. That's 12th in the entire country, which is really, really, really good. Dude is just a natural point guard, fun to watch. They get a lot of rim protection from the bigs. They're second in the A-10 and top 100 in the country in block percentage. Michael Hughes has been tremendous for them so far. Kind of an under-the-radar guy. You're not going to hear a ton about him, but he's there. He's a big man. He's averaging 13 points a game, shooting about 65% from the floor, giving him almost 6 rebounds and over a block per game, getting it done really well on both ends, anchoring the front court for them. And then, so when you combine the freshman guard play, plus the way Michael Hughes is playing, and then you've got Eric Williams, who's a top 10 player in the A-10, you know, it seems like there's a lot there for Duquesne, and they could certainly be a team that becomes a lot better right now than, or a lot better throughout the conference season than they're being perceived right now. The thing about teams like this is just when you add so many new pieces, you can't, it's tough to just assume that teams like this are just going to continue meshing throughout the season. They don't just always improve linearly, I think, like people expect them to. Sometimes the freshmen hit a wall, rotations break down, or they stop working. I think Duquesne is the prototype of a team that's probably going to be terrifying next year. I think this year they certainly could wiggle into the top 4. I'd probably have them maybe more in the 5-7 range. But they'll be good. They'll be really fun to watch. All A-10 consideration. Eric Williams Jr. probably first team, maybe more likely second team range. I think Michael Hughes might be all defense, and Sincere Carey probably all rookie. But that's Duquesne. Not too much of a threat to win the conference, but they're fun. They're fun to watch. All right, now let's get to Rhode Island. Rhode Island is a really interesting case study. They're a terrible scoring team so far this year. 318th in the country in half-court offense. If you're looking at effective field goal percentage, also only 339th in transition. It's just a team that's having a lot of trouble putting the biscuit in the basket right now. They only shoot 25% from three. That is just weighing down those numbers like an anchor. Really, really tough to field a good offense when you do not shoot well at all from three. Defensively, they're really good. That's what's keeping them afloat. They only allow opponents to shoot 45% effective field goal percentage. Part of that is that as bad as they are shooting at three, they hold their opponents to shoot almost as poorly. 27.5% from deep is what you're shooting if you've been playing Rhode Island this year. Rhode Island has a ton of physical talent. It'll be interesting to see what first-year coach David Cox can do with it and see how he can mold it throughout the season. In terms of personnel, Jeff Doughton has been fantastic. He's averaging almost 17 points a game, 4 assists, 4 rebounds, steal and a half. He's a guy who's going to get all-conference consideration easily, maybe a first-teamer. Cyril Langevin has been a monster, averaging a double-double, 14.5 points, 10 rebounds per game, 1.3 blocks, shooting 54% from the field. Doughton and Langevin have been really, really good. So I think if you're wondering how is it that Doughton and Langevin have been so good, but Rhodey still, you know, isn't as threatening as I think people thought they were going to be. Fats Russell has just been having a really rough go of it in the Atta Conference, at least. He's averaging more shots than points, which is not good. 14.3 points per game on 15.3 attempts. He's shooting 39% from inside the arc. He's shooting 18% from three. That's bringing down their offense like an anchor. The freshmen are fine. But if you recall, Rhode Island had one of the best recruiting classes, probably the best top-to-bottom recruiting class in the A-10. And people were expecting, if you were expecting Rhodey to be good this year, you were expecting those freshmen to be impact players right away. But they're not there yet. They're good. They're going to be fine. But they're not impact players at the moment. All of them are combining to average 15 points and 11 rebounds per game. Forgive me, I only wrote down their last names, but I think Tyrese Martin, Dana Tate, and Jermaine Harris, I think it is. I might have gotten those wrong. But those three combined for 15 points and 11 rebounds per game. So good players, not impactful enough right now to propel Rhodey into the top of the conference conversation. One thing that's working in Rhodey's favor, they are 33% from deep in their last 5 games. That's a lot better. If they carry that into conference play, I think you'll see that they might surprise. But one other thing I want to make sure I mention is don't be fooled by the brand name in the West Virginia win. West Virginia was without Sagabakanate, he's one of the best shot blockers in the country. Without him, West Virginia only beat Jacksonville State by 2. They beat Lehigh by 10. So I think people see the West Virginia win and they're like, ooh, that's really good. But I would say, you know, West Virginia is probably more like a top 100 team without Kanate than a top 50 team. But that's Rhode Island. They're going to be, you know, physically, they're overwhelming. I think they look a lot like St. Louis in terms of just having much bigger players on the court at most positions, with the exception of Fats Russell, obviously, who's like 5 foot nothing. But they're big, they're physical. We're going to, you know, they have a lot of room to grow, I think. But then there's also a chance that Langevin and Jeff Doughton aren't necessarily going to be as good in conference play because they've been so fantastic in the outer conference. I think Arrow's pointing up on them a little bit, though. Fats Russell, I think he just can't continue to be this inefficient. Either he's going to figure it out, or if he doesn't figure it out, I think he's going to start taking less shots, and those shots are going to go to people who are going to be better with them. And so I would say, you know, Rhode Island probably wouldn't be surprised to see them break into the top 4 in the A-10. Certainly would not expect it to happen, though. Now we get to St. Joe's. St. Joe's is one of the teams that's also been a little bit disappointing at a conference. Sorry, that doesn't narrow it down at all. All the A-10 teams are pretty disappointing at a conference. St. Joe's, one of those teams, felt like they blew some real opportunities there, though. Especially they beat Old Dominion and Loyola. They played 4 other KenPom top 100 teams, lost to all of them. And they also have a pretty bad loss to William & Mary. William & Mary is KenPom's 200th ranked team right now. So St. Joe's, I think, is sitting at 7-5 at a conference. They're good, not great yet. Certainly have the horses to potentially round into shape, but, you know, we'll see. Digging into them, Charlie Brown, obviously, fantastic player, going to be a player of the year candidate, averaging over 20 points, 5 rebounds per game, 1 block, 1 steal, over 48% from 3, really, really good player. He's going to be a force in the A-10. Lamar Kimball's been really good, too. He was not super efficient last time he played a full season. I think when I previewed St. Joe's at the preview pod last year, Or maybe in this year's preview pod, Lamar Kimball is the kind of guy who took as many shots, shots per game, and his points per game were like the same number, which isn't very good. This year, he's still not super efficient, but he's a lot better. 17.5 points per game on 14 shots. Pretty good. And he played great in the Villanova game. Charlie Brown missed the Villanova game. I watched a big part of it. I thought Fresh Kimball looked fantastic. And so he's been good. He's rounding into shape here. Then you've got Jared Bynum, also a really good-looking freshman. 12 points, almost 4 assists, 3.3 rebounds, steal and a half per game. He's shooting 40% from 3. He's got a 3-to-1 assist-to-turnover ratio, 3.7 assists per game, 1.2 turnovers. And again, he's just a freshman. It's really fantastic. I think you've got those three guys. Then you've got Taylor Funk. Taylor Funk's another 10 points per game guy. But then it's this supporting cast that's come up pretty short for St. Joe's. They get 61 points per game from their top four guys, and they get 13 points per game from everybody else. No one else outside the top four is hitting 5 points per game. I think the the closest guy would be Pier Francesco Oliva. They call him Checo. He's at like 4.7 points per game. So they just don't have a lot of scoring options off the bench, and that makes it tough to overcome those off nights from any of those top guys that they have. The way that they play, as Martelli teams always do, they keep teams out of the paint really, really well. They're only allowing opponents to take less than 30% of their shots at the rim. That's what Martelli's been doing forever. Pack the paint, keep teams out of the paint, turn your opponents into jump shooting teams. Generally works pretty well for them. The problem this year is that opponents are lighting them up from outside. Opponents are taking almost 47% of shots from three, and they're hitting about 36.6% of them. It's really tough to be a good defensive team when you allow your opponents to take that many threes and to hit them at that rate. I would expect Martelli to be able to figure this out. I think Martelli's a great coach. I think my thoughts are well documented if you've been following this pod. The defense is working in the sense that they're keeping teams out of the paint. I think Martelli's good enough to make the tweaks necessary in order to bring down that three-point attempt rate as well. But I think that more generally, they're not going to hit their ceiling unless Charlie Brown either just totally goes supernova or one of those role players steps into a more regular scoring role. I think if you're evaluating them, you really just wish that they had one more guy who could come off the bench or wherever, just one more guy who could light you up. I think if it's not Charlie Brown, it's Fresh Kimball, and if it's not Fresh Kimball, then you just don't know who it's going to be. Jared Bynum might get there, but again, he's only a freshman. Taylor Funk, certainly great at what he does, but he's not a volume scorer, and doesn't seem to be his game. And now we're at the point, I think St. Joe's is probably the class of tier two here. They're probably, pretty clearly fifth, I think, in the A-10 right now. And now we're at the point where I think we're going to start handicapping what are their odds to win the conference regular season. And I would put St. Joe's probably at around 10%, might be a little bit generous. But I think we'll get to the top tier here soon. I'm not sure that you can really say that there are too many teams that are definitively much better than they are. I think we're really at the point where there's not a lot of separation. You could say St. Joe's is, either the top of tier two or the bottom of tier one, whatever, they are where they are. But I think they're in the conversation for potentially taking home the regular season league title. All right, so let's pause here. Before we get to tier one, I want to take a quick break to answer a couple questions that we got from Twitter. So we'll just call this halftime. Taking a little halftime break here. First question from our buddy UMassFan33 on Twitter. Do you think it's easier for teams struggling on offense or struggling on defense to turn things around during conference play? I really appreciate questions like this because they allow me to pontificate on things where I just have absolutely no idea what I'm talking about. I think my impression would be probably easier. Obviously this is situational and depends on all sorts of contexts that you don't really have from a very general question like that. Probably a little bit easier to turn things around on defense, I think, because you can scheme a good defense. It's a lot about hustle, effort, positioning. It's a lot of things that are more coachable. if you don't have shooters or you don't have bucket getters, it's tough to make buckets appear if you don't have guys who have that natural skill set. So I think it's a little bit easier to coach around the if you don't have guys who have the natural defensive skill set, I think it's easier to coach around that. I don't think it's quite as easy to make buckets appear out of nowhere if that's where you struggle. So thank you for that question, and I hope I didn't make a fool of myself answering that. Second question from Jake Margolis from Jake Margolis, I think, is a Davidson guy. Jake Margolis on Twitter asks, where does Mason go from this season if they don't win the A-10 tournament? Should they be better or worse next season? That's really, really interesting. I think, you know, I don't know who this Mason team is yet, so I really want to wait to see how they do in conference play before I say they're going to be better or they're going to be worse. If they finish like 9th or 10th in conference, I'm going to say, you know, yeah, next year they're going to be better. If they, you know, put it together and finish like, you know, 5th or 6th, they're hopefully even better, then I'm going to say that they got, you know, they'll probably regress a little bit. I think they'll be middle of the pack next year. Again, it's tough to see, you know, if it's not Reuter, if it's not Gonar, and they're going to be losing Otis Livingston, who's, you know, far and away the best player on the team right now. It's tough to see who sort of steps into that role and is the development of the guys around them. Is that going to be good enough to propel them up an extra level? So I would say Mason's probably, I would project them for like middle of the pack A-10 next year. But it's an interesting question. And then bonus third question that I'm going to ask myself is, what do you think is a rule change we could implement in college basketball to make the product more entertaining? And my answer to that is that I think the referee should change the signal for a three ball. Instead of putting your hands up like it's a field goal in football, I think they should do the three goggles. And so the three goggles, that's when you put your thumb and your forefinger together, you put them over your eyes, and you got, you know, the three fingers that you can wiggle. I think the ref should have to do the three goggles at the player they shot it over, pan over to the scorer's table, and then even run down the court with the three goggles still on his face as a way to signal that you just hit a three-point shot. All right, halftime's over. Let's start breaking down tier one. Let's start with St. Louis. St. Louis is, you know, kind of doing this on the fly right now because we just got the Cartieri-Gordon news today. I do not know how this is going to affect them. So before we get into that, let's just start with an overview of St. Louis. They really missed opportunities to shore up what I think could have been a really solid at-large resume. They have good wins against Seton Hall, Butler, and Oregon State. They blew a late lead against Houston, which is a real bummer. Houston's so good this year. Houston's still undefeated as of the time recording this, I believe. Then they lost a really close game to Pittsburgh, lost a close one to Southern Illinois. Totally no-showed against Florida State. I really think that the Houston and FSU games were two of the last games in their out-of-conference schedule. I really think that if they had won either Houston or Florida State, we would be talking about them as a very close to definitely an at-large team. As it is, they're going to maybe be on the bubble, but they're probably going to have to win 14, probably 15 games into conference in order to work their way into that conversation. So that's St. Louis just sort of like epitomizes just how disappointing the A-10 has been at a conference. Even the one of the best teams with the best showings out there just still couldn't quite get there. In terms of how they play, I think their individual pieces are probably the best in the A-10. And, you know, again, if you've listened to this pod, you know, I'm not a big fan of Travis Ford. I generally don't think he gets the most out of the talent he puts on the floor. I think it's probably still true this year. St. Louis is just incredibly talented top to bottom. Jordan Goodwin is a real stat stuffer. He's got 10.5 points, 6 rebounds, 3 assists, 2.3 steals per game, which is silly, silly good. It's you know, not realistic. Then you've got Javon Bess has just been outrageous. 15.5 points, 7.5 rebounds, 2 assists, 1.7 steals per game. Javon Bess is, I think he's going to be in first team all A-10 consideration. Hassan French, great post defender. Cartieri-Gordon was playing pretty well before he left, but that's a big void that they've got to fill now. Tremaine Isabel has been pretty good, provided him with much-needed scoring and shooting. I think the big problem that St. Louis has right now, they're 14th in adjusted defense, crazy good defensive team. only 218th in adjusted offense. They simply don't shoot very well. And this has sort of been the story of Travis Ford's career. He can coach up a defense, offense usually pretty ugly. They do everything well on defense. They block a ton of shots, 44th in KenPom. They get a ton of steals, 24th in steal percentage on KenPom. In the top 50 in both offensive rebounding position percentage and defensive rebounding percentage. It's a team that's just really the total package on defense. They get blocks, they get steals, three-point attempts, three-point percentage, rebounds. All of those numbers are top 50 in the country in KenPom. So it's not like they just do one thing really well. It's like they do everything really, really well on defense. Offensively, their problem is still outside the arc. They only take 31% of their shots from three. They hit less than 32% from three. This is a team, they're built to win ugly. They're built to play in rock fights. In the A-10, people are going to pack the paint against them and dare them to shoot. Only Javon Bess, who's shooting about 37%, and Tremaine Isabel have been decent shooters on volume for them. That might change if Deion Wiley comes back, depending on how they distribute those minutes that are missing from Cartieri Gordon. Gordon was getting like 24 minutes a game, so it's a pretty big gap he leaves. They have shooters on the bench. One of their shooting problems was that their best lineups were like Gordon, who's a big, he can step outside and shoot, but you know, he's a big. Hassan French, who's a big. Javon Bess, who's an okay shooter. Jordan Goodwin isn't a good shooter. And then Isabel. So, you know, usually they would only have two shooters on the court. Maybe there's a chance this gets better because Gordon's minutes get replaced with, you know, Fred Thatch or Deion Wiley, if he comes back, and those minutes that Gordon was getting start going to someone who can spread the floor and hit from deep. So that's something to watch. You know, I think the shooting can potentially get better. But then St. Louis's identity is pretty clearly a defense and rebounding team. And so, you know, it's really tough to project them too well since, you know, we don't know how they're going to redistribute those Gordon minutes. And I think their minutes distribution in their next couple games is going to be, something for anyone who's like interested in the A-10 race to watch, because it's going to tell us what direction are they going. Are they doubling down on size and defense and rebounding, and like, is DJ Foreman going to get more minutes? Is Casey Hankton going to get more minutes? Or, you know, do they go a little bit smaller and try and put a shooter on the floor more often? So we'll see there. I had St. Louis at about 20% odds to win the regular season. Big fan of the talent that they put on the floor. Again, not the biggest fan of Travis Ford. I think it's sort of been his MO his entire career. This is a team that's going to fart away some games that they should win. And they're going to have some pretty frustrating losses, you know, in a perfect world. I could have seen them getting to like 14 or 15 wins. Much tougher to see that now without Gordon in the picture. I would probably come down off the 20% a little bit, probably to 10 or 15% at this point, but got to think about it a little bit more. But that's St. Louis. I think that's where they're at the moment. Moving on, let's get to Dayton. Dayton is one of the surprise fun teams on the season. If you watch these guys, they play good basketball. They're fun to watch. It's nice and clean. They're really good on offense. Another team, unfortunately, probably screwed the pooch at a conference. They blew a lead against Mississippi State. They played close games against Oklahoma and UVA. Their best win is over Butler. They don't have any other win in the KenPom top 100, and only three wins in the top 200. So Dayton's a really talented team. They're fun to watch. They'll be a force in the A-10. Are they going to be an at-large team? No, absolutely not. So a little bit about them. Josh Cunningham and Jalen Crutcher have been great. Josh Cunningham, no surprise. I think he was first or second team All A-10 last year. Forgive me, I'm forgetting if he was on the first or the second team. I think he was second team. But he averaged 16 points per game, 5.8 rebounds, 2 assists, shooting 67% from 2 this season. Jalen Crutcher, 14 points, 6 assists, 4 rebounds, over 1 steal per game, shooting almost 44% from 3. Personally, I love seeing those kind of stat lines from guards. The 6 assists in addition to the steals that he's able to generate is just really, really cool to see. So for Dayton, we knew that Josh Cunningham, Jalen Crutcher, Trey Landers was a really solid core coming into the season. just about everything else was a question mark. We didn't know what else they had. And part of the reason I was a little bit higher on Dayton, I think, than others were. And part of that was because, like, if anything else works out, Dayton's going to be pretty good, especially in a down A-10. And Obi Toppin, freshman, he's been a revelation this year. 13.4 points, 4 rebounds. He's shooting 73%. He's in many ways kind of a catch and dunk player, but when you say that about guys, usually it kind of sells them short. It's not the case for him. He's so freaking athletic. He's a catch and dunk player, but in a way that, you know, is much more difficult to stop than your average catch and dunk player. And, you know, he's kind of polished in the post, too. He's got some moves. He's incredibly athletic for a big. He threw down a breakaway between the legs dunk against Georgia Southern while the game was still within reach. It's funny, Anthony Grant looks absolutely pissed on the bench during this, but the crowd's going absolutely nuts. Looks like an electric moment. He's a really, really fun player, incredibly athletic. I'm terrible at telling you whether or not guys from college are going to be NBA players. I have to think Obi's a pretty legitimate NBA prospect, just because guys with his size and with his ability to move are pretty rare. Dayton's big concern over the course of an 18-game season is their bench. Jerry Mattos is done for the season. They have their top six guys, which is their starting lineup, plus Ryan Mikesell. They get less than 5 points per game outside of the top six guys. That's almost nothing. That's really, really bad. They had to pull the red shirt off of Frankie Policelli. So this year they announced before the season Frankie Policelli was going to red shirt. They had to pull the red shirt off of him because they only have, I think, eight or nine scholarship players this year. And, you know, Frankie doesn't seem ready to contribute. He's averaging, I think, less than half a point per game so far. So, you know, not trying to bash the kid, but, you know, you put the red shirt on him because you don't think he's ready to contribute. Then you have to pull it off. You know, he's still not ready to contribute. It's more of his freshman year. He just needs to be a warm body to help, spell some minutes for the rest of the Dayton starters. They really can't afford another injury. They've really got those six guys. And then unless someone else emerges, which I don't think I would count on at this point, but outside of those six guys, they can't. You're not going to be able to plug somebody in to one of those positions without experiencing a significant drop off. But Dayton is 12th in the nation in effective field goal percentage on KenPom. They rebound really well, 40th in defensive rebounding percentage. They shoot 75% at the rim, which is third in the country. And they're top 100 in the country in shots at the rim. So this is a team that penetrates as well as just about anybody in the entire NCAA. They are only shooting 32% from deep. I think this will turn around because Trey Landers is shooting 20%, which is just really, really bad. He shot 35% last year. Would not expect that to keep up. I think he'll find his stroke at some point, and Dayton's going to be even better offensively. On defense, they keep opponents out of the paint really well, 21st in the country in percentage of opponent shots at the rim. Other numbers are middling. They mostly play it straight up. They don't get a ton of steals. They don't get a ton of blocks. But if you miss, they will grab the rebound. I would put Dayton's odds to win the conference at 20-ish percent. I think that they're as talented as any team in the conference. The problem is really the bench. They're relying on six guys, and we're going to get to VCU in a minute, but VCU goes like 11 deep pretty legitimately. Dayton is just going to have a tough time, I think, over the course of an 18-game conference schedule. I think you're going to see him probably drop a roadie or two. That's surprising, just because it's really tough to have such a thin bench all season long and still achieve like a 14 or 15 win cap in a league like the A-10, even in a down year. So I like Dayton. Going to be a lot of fun to watch. Probably put them right around 20% to win the conference. Feels right. All right, only two teams left. Start with Davidson. Davidson is another team that I think probably could have put together an out-of-conference, an at-large resume out-of-conference if things had gone differently. However, they were missing Kellen Grady for the Temple, Wake Forest, and North Carolina games, which probably murdered their at-large chances. They should have won Temple. They only lost to Temple by two in overtime without Grady. Got to think they win that game with him. Wake Forest is trash this year. Davidson was favored, even though everybody knew Grady wasn't playing. And they just kind of no-showed that game, which is unfortunate. But that wouldn't have really mattered. They probably had to win either Temple or UNC, and they didn't really give UNC much of a game either. I think they could have you know, made it tighter if Grady was playing in that one. Would I have expected them to win it? No, of course not. But it's just unfortunate. Their best wins are Northeastern and Wichita State. Winthrop is the only other KenPom top 150 win they have. Again, they're going to be a good team, but there's just no point in talking about an at-large bid because they're not even going to be in the conversation. Let's dig into their players a little bit. John Axel Goodmanson, one of the most, maybe the most well-rounded player in the A-10. The dude just does everything. Almost 18 points per game, 6 rebounds per game, 4.5 assists, shoots 37% from 3. Really one of my favorite players, and it feels like even this year just still doesn't quite get the pub that he deserves. He's so freaking good, and I think if you watch Davidson play, you'll see it. Kellen Grady, legit player of the year candidate, 19.4 points per game, 4 rebounds, 2 assists, steal and a half, only taking 14 shots per game, again shooting 37.5% from 3. The interesting thing about Davidson without Kellen Grady is that John Axel isn't taking more shots, even though he's their second best scorer. He's got 12 field goal attempts per game with Grady, only 13 without him. He's such a good team player. It's not in his DNA to go look for his own shot, but I think Davidson might be a little bit better off if he did. Because what's happening is guys like, you know, Carter Collins, Kashawn Pritchett end up taking those shots in Grady's absence instead. And, you know, they're good, but they're not, you know, they're not at the Grady or John Axel level. Davidson also relies a lot on freshmen this year. Luka Brajkovic and Luke Frampton, both starters. Frampton shooting over 34% on 8 three-point attempts per game. So the percentage isn't mind-blowing, but that volume is 8 three-point attempts per game. Is not a lot of guys in the entire country take that many threes per game. So that volume is serious. Brajkovic is a traditional back-to-the-basket big. He's averaging 12-7 so far this year. He can also step out, obviously. I feel like I don't even have to say that, because if you've watched Davidson play at all in the past 5 years, you don't see the floor unless you can step out and hit from three. But they're only shooting 34% from deep as a team. Nobody's shooting over 40%, which is really interesting because, you know, usually the Davidson teams of the past few years have just been just sharpshooters everywhere, right? That's not the case for them so far this season. Kashawn Pritchett only shooting 27% from deep, which really hurts them. This is another number I would expect to get better over the course of the season. I don't really know why I expected it to get better, other than, you know, I think Pritchett probably has to shoot a little bit better. And, you know, I don't know if there's much of an argument. You know, maybe they stay here. Maybe they stay at 34%, and that sort of caps their upside, though. As Bob McKillop always does, they rebound really well on the defensive side. They do not chase offensive rebounds at all. 310th in the country in offensive rebounding. They keep teams out of the paint really, really well. Under 28% of opponent shots at the rim. Opponents only shooting 55% when they get there. However, these numbers are almost identical to St. Joe's. Opponents take 46.8% of their shots from three and are shooting 36.6%. That's really bad. The perimeter defense needs a lot of improvement. Packing the paint only means so much. If you know, people are just able to shoot over your zone or to shoot over your efforts to keep them out of the paint, you know, then keeping them out of the paint doesn't mean a whole lot. Again, they're one of the slowest paced teams in the country, 253 on KenPom. So I think that this is a team where, you know, we don't quite know how they're going to come along. I don't feel like they've clicked at all. And even talking to some Davidson people, I don't know if Davidson fans have felt like they've really clicked at all in the out of conference either, even with Kellen Grady. Even though they looked, you know, they looked pretty good, I don't know if anybody got the sense that they really had their A game at all throughout the season. Or throughout the out of conference, I should say. But Kellen Grady is going to be a player of the year candidate, probably the front runner just on, you know, brand name recognition at this point. John Axel Goodmanson is going to be an all conference guy. Luke Frampton and Luka Brajkovic, you know, going to be strong contenders for the all rookie team. outside of that, they just don't get a whole lot. So I think if you're, you know, you don't want to say that their odds to win are too low because they've got Kellen Grady, definitely the kind of guy who can carry you to 14 conference wins, you know, just by himself. And John Axel's really good as well. I would put their odds to win probably at around 10%, I think. That's where I'm at with them. They just got a few too many unknowns, and I don't know why or, you know, how we're expecting them to, you know, to make those up over the course of the conference season.
All right, let's bring this thing home. It kills me to do this, but I think VCU is pretty clearly the best team in the A-10 out of conference. Heading into conference play, I've got them at like 50% to win the conference regular season, not just because I think they're better. I think, you know, there's a pretty good argument for Dayton here, but the depth issue is really significant. Dayton is not deep at all. Neither is Davidson, really, in terms of, like, really quality guys. You know, they can throw a lot of guys at you, but VCU, I think, just has quality up and down their roster. So that I think VCU, but I'm probably at about 50% to win the conference. I forget where we're at with the percentages right now, but it's something like VCU 50%, Davidson, St. Louis, St. Joe's, and Dayton around 10%. Which I realize is probably 90%, I think. So then, you know, I'll put 10% on the field. It's not exactly where I would land if I had more time to think about it, but I think that's where we're at right now. Digging into VCU a little bit, they disappointed a little bit, just in the sense that you really want them to have one more, want them to have won one more game if they, in their out of conference, if they're going to get an at-large bid. They've only lost to teams in the top 100, St. John's, Old Dominion, Virginia, and Charleston. But, you know, they could have a pretty solid at-large resume if they just had one more of those. But the wins over Texas, Temple, and Hofstra even actually turned out to be really good. Deep rotation. They got 9 guys getting 14-plus minutes, another 3 guys getting 6 to 8 minutes, no one getting over 29 minutes per game. I think they're a team that's not going to – probably less likely than other teams to have like a bad night and just lose a dumb game that you don't expect them to. The big surprise for them this year is that they've been outrageously good defensively. In the preseason pod, I felt like we had their offense pegged pretty well. Offense is spotty. There's not a lot of shooting. They've got guard issues. They don't really have a facilitator, so they turn the ball over a lot. But, like, holy hell is that defense good. They lead the A-10 in effective field goal percentage, both in transition and in the half court. Lead the A-10 in field goal percentage at the rim and opponent 3-point field goal percentage. They've got 9 guys averaging more than half a steal per game. They're just silly good at all three levels, allowing opponents to shoot 52% at the rim. So that's layups and dunks. 52% is a really great number for a defense there. That's 25th in the NCAA, 30.2% on 2-point jumpers, 26.5% from 3, 9th in the NCAA. So there's just nowhere on the floor to get off a good shot against VCU. And that's in addition to turning over the opponent on 23.6% of possessions, 16th according to KenPom. Even if you get off a shot, which, you know, they turn people over so much, you're not going to get off as many shots as you want to. Even if you get a shot off, it likely won't be a good one. Opponents are averaging 18.2 seconds per possession, which is top 30 in the NCAA. And by that, I mean it's longer. So there's some indication that opponents just have a ton of trouble getting the quality shots that they want. Probably the press makes it difficult for them to get over the timeline. And as much time as they want, you're setting your offense later. It just, like, everything starts with the press there. And this year, last year they struggled because they didn't really have the horses to press at all. This year, they definitely have the horses. Corey Douglas, 21st in the country in block rate on KenPom. Marcus Evans, 40th in steal rate on KenPom in the entire country. So, you know, we can talk about the defense for a long time. Defense is great. VCU's issue is on offense. They have some problems. They're not in the top 200 in KenPom in offensive efficiency. Their big issues are 3-point shooting and turnovers, 29% from deep, 20% turnover rate. We thought we might have this turnover problem in the preseason pod. their top three guys, the top three usage guys, Evans, Isaac Van, and Deriontay Jenkins. They all have negative career assist to turnover ratios. So it's not totally surprising that the offense is a little bit disjointed here. They shoot well at the rim, but they don't get there very much. 32.6% of their shots are there, but they're shooting 65%. 29.4% on jumpers from two, and again 29% from three. So they're just not a good shooting team. If you can keep them out of the paint, you can limit them offensively. One caveat is that a lot of the numbers that I'm talking about here are adjusted, particularly the KenPom ones, but the shooting by location numbers are not. And VCU's played a really good schedule, so there might be some mental adjustment needed there. One thing I think that VCU fans can hang their hat on is that Deriontay Jenkins, his entire career has been a fantastic shooter, but he's shooting under 31% from three. He was over 40% his first two seasons. I think he was like 45% as a freshman, 41, 42% last year. Not even at 31% this season. I'm assuming that that has to change. It would be rare for a guy like Deriontay to shoot so well his first two seasons and then just randomly not shoot well at all as a junior. So if that gets better, VCU is going to be pretty scary. But then, you got Marcus Evans and Isaac Van. They're both under 27%. I think Evans is at 26% from three. Van's at 22% from three. So they're both pretty bad shooters. Evans shot 37% two seasons ago at Rice. Maybe he turns it around. Van has always been more of a slasher, not as much of a shooter. So I think that, you know, VCU, they're going to press the hell out of people. Teams are going to have trouble with it. They're going to throw a million guys at you again. And I think that they're going to win night in and night out in the A-10 on the strength of their defense. Hate VCU. Hope I'm wrong. But I think that's where we're at. I think you got to consider them the odds-on favorite to win the conference at this point. All right, so I think we're wrapped up here. God bless your soul if you're still listening at this point and listening to me talk to myself for like an hour. A couple of parting thoughts. Cartieri Gordon's departure from St. Louis, again, just holy shit, was not expecting that. Could be a blessing in disguise for St. Louis if it lets them put more shooters on the floor. I think that they've got the horses where they don't necessarily need to sacrifice that defense and rebounding identity to get more guys who can stretch the floor on the floor for them. So again, that's a top thing that I'll be monitoring in the A-10 here. I missed a couple of things I wanted to mention. Pierre Francesco Oliva for St. Joe's Checo is a top 50 rebounder in the country, defensive rebounding rate on KenPom. Luan Pipkins, top 50 assist rate guy on KenPom. I wanted to make sure I mentioned those. Guys who are going to get all conference consideration based on, I think, what they've done out of conference. And we're just talking first team here, so it's not going to be an exhaustive list. But I think Josh Cunningham, Marcus Evans, Javon Bess, Eric Williams, Luan Pipkins, Kellen Grady. I think that's a good starting list for guys who are going to be jockeying for a position for those A-10 first team spots. Overall, I think that the A-10 is looking at like a one-bid league. St. Louis or VCU needs to get to 15, maybe even 16 wins in conference to change that. I don't think that they're strong enough. Both had chances to really strengthen that resume, make it a lot better. But I think we are where we are right now, and that is the A-10 is probably a one-bid league. Excuse me. And probably going to come back with a vengeance next year. That being said, conference play starts. Doesn't make me any less excited. Conference play kicks off today with St. Joe's hosting Mason at 7:30. That's the only game on Thursday night. And then on Saturday, I think every other team in the conference plays. So we'll have six games on Saturday. So it'll be a ton of fun. We'll continue writing and potting about it. In the meantime, thank you for listening to the By George podcast.
I get buckets.
I get buckets.
I get buckets. I get buckets. I get buckets.
I get buckets.
I get buckets. I get buckets.
I get buckets.